And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to another 9 to noon show. It is Tuesday, the 7th of October, 2025, and thank you so much for joining us. We have 3 hours, hopefully to keep you informed and entertained here. With myself and the team, Caroline Orr and Shannon Wilkins. And we want your views, your comments, your interactions throughout the course of the morning as always. We've got a lot to talk about. Also coming up after 10, by the way, we've got the very latest appeals and information from Ungada Shia Kana. Right, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25000. If you want to give us a call either, it's 07491 25000. And if you want to email the program, comments at highlandradio.com. So you could be watching a clip of this on social media, listening back to the show on podcast or the overnight repeat. We want your views as well. Comments at highlandradio.com or even your WhatsApps and texts. We normally can pick them up as well. And just to remind you, if you want to watch the show, as hundreds of you do, thousands at times, hundreds of you do every day across our various platforms, then feel free to do so. On the YouTube app, you can go to Highland Radio Ireland and watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're across the Facebook pages, of course, and on the X platform. Right, let's go to the papers. Obviously, we're going to get to the budget, but a lot of coverage of the fallout from Jim Gavin withdrawing from the race for the Aris. And Fianna Fáil was told, and this is quite interesting, because when I was chatting to Brendan Byrne yesterday, we didn't have this information. And you might remember that Brendan Byrne said, and this was in the absence of this information, you know, what kind of due diligence could Fianna Fáil have done? Because it was the tenant that came forward to the paper and they wouldn't have had that information. Well, it turns out they actually did have that information. Fianna Fáil was told there was a question questions for Jim Gavin about a specific issue with a tenant before he was picked as their candidate. This is despite Taoiseach Micheál Martin's leadership claiming it knew nothing about Mr. Gavin's dispute over $3,300 he owed to a former tenant. But in an email from the Irish Independent on September 8th, before Mr. Gavin's selection, the party was notified of questions about these issues. It comes as Fianna Fáil TDs have warned that Mr. Martin's leadership will hinge on a review they are demanding into what vetting process was carried out before the former GEA boss was put forward as a candidate. Now, I don't believe it hinges on that at all, but anyway. A number of TDs said there were given assurances by the party leadership ahead of the nomination process that a proper vetting process had taken place. Now, there was a lot of talk and speculation as to who Fianna Fáil might choose. And I note that Micheál Martin said that, you know, no one was stepping forward from within the party. But, I mean, Pat the Cope Gallagher was mentioned. And I think if he were in there right now, he'd have been doing quite a sterling job, potentially for the party. So there were people, but Micheál Martin claimed yesterday that they weren't coming forward. I think the months were June, July, August. He says no one really was coming forward. But anyway, that controversy continues and will continue, no doubt about that. On to the budget today, and it's one of those whereby, you know, not an awful lot's going to happen. Maybe that's the story in and of itself. But the government is set to defend a prudent budget as families are to miss out on assistance payments and tax adjustments. Ministers have been warned to be strict with spending, with negotiations focusing on what would deliver results and impact on society. Election-era promises to businesses, an end to once-off measures, and a cutback in spending have reportedly had major influences on budget talks. As a result, the announcement today is likely to cause a major political row, as many will miss out on previous supports. Due to a reining in of spending, energy credits will not appear in the budget, despite figures showing a growth in arrears. As reported in the Irish Mail on Sunday, over 500,000 households are facing energy bill arrears ahead of a planned tax hike to the payments. There's pressure on the government to retain some of these assistance payments due to the numbers of struggling households. Cabinet sources have expressed disagreement with the measure, particularly 2 weeks ahead of the presidential election. So one of the big things they are going to do is cut the VAT on food for businesses. And I understand very much so that businesses will welcome that. It's not necessarily going to be passed on to you, the consumer, but it will make certainly their businesses more profitable, or in fact, maybe just profitable. But to give you an example, so that tax package to reduce VAT on food, and not all of you eat out, right? How many of you actually do? That's costing each household around about €430 to implement that VAT cut. So that's the either or in this, and that was discussed some time ago. But just to give you a sense of the figures, around 430 per household, or is it per worker? Anyway, I'd need to clarify that. That's how much it's costing for the VAT cut to hospitality. Cabinet sources have expressed disagreement with the measures, particularly 2 weeks ahead of the presidential election. But you know what? You shouldn't be putting a budget together to do with the presidential election. That's ridiculous. But anyway, that's what's written in front of me. Micheál Martin has said once-off payments are set to be replaced with more targeted measures. So my question for you this morning is, what would you like to see in the budget? You know, what do you think would be the right thing to do? And it might be because it affects you personally, or maybe you think it's best for society. So, you know, if you get a pay rise this year, it's going to be taken in tax. Much of it's going to be taken in tax, dependent on what your income is, because the tax bands aren't being widened. So the benefit of the tax brackets being widened was that maybe if you were just hovering underneath the tax bracket, it's widened somewhat, and then you get a pay rise, you kind of get most of that money. Whereas with the tax bands being narrowed, that will go to tax. Okay, so that's going to adjust spending. And what does less people spending in the economy lead to? You know, so what do you want in the budget? What do you think should have been in the budget? I know you're talking about this at home when you're watching the news or listening to this program. I want you to text me in 086 60 25,000. What should have been cut? What shouldn't have been cut? I mean, there's good news in terms of SNA employment, Garda employment, etc. And hopefully we'd get our fair share up here in relation to that. But the day-to-day stuff, you know, there is going to be an increase in fuel coming on shortly because of carbon taxes increasing. I don't think that's going to be increased in the budget. Cigarettes are going to go up, of course. I think booze is remaining unchanged. But I think we've moved on as a society whereby the headlines were cigs and booze now, you know, because we're worried about other stuff. But I mean, think about the 230,000, you know, children on who are effectively living in poverty. You know, is it... What do you think really should be done in relation to that, if anything, or in terms of the pension or social welfare payments? What would you like to have seen, or what would you like to see? 086 60 25,000, have your say. The Irish Times this morning, a group of United States congressional representatives have written to the Taoiseach to warn of the damage to Irish-US relations if the government proceeds with the Occupied Territories Bill. And this is geopolitics in action. Israel putting pressure on America. America putting pressure on the Irish government, saying, hey, our relationship could be damaged if you pass this bill. And this is probably why it's been delayed. The US campaign against the promised Oireachtas legislation, due to be debated by the Dáil in the coming weeks, is ramping up. Their letter to Micheál Martin, the latest effort from a US campaign against the bill that is gathering support in Washington, D.C., warns that the measures in the proposed legislation will damage U.S. companies in Ireland and harm economic connections, ties between the two countries. As friends of Ireland and strong advocates for a close relationship between Ireland and the United States, we write to express our deep concern over Ireland's one-sided approach to Israel, a vital ally of the United States, the letter states. So there's the pressure on. And 16 Irish citizens who were taken into custody illegally, by all accounts, by Israel. They're on their journey home. 16 Irish citizens detained by Israel during the interception of the Global Summit flotilla were freed and are on the journey home last night, the Taoiseach has said. They were among approximately 450 people held after Israel intercepted 42 vessels taking part in the flotilla, which was taking aid to Gaza. And although, you know, the Israelis knew the world's eyes were on these individuals, they didn't treat them very well, withheld sanitary products, water, food, clean water and food, had them seated in those images you might have seen, captives in Guantanamo Bay, had them seated like that. They didn't treat them very well at all, even though they knew there'd be an awful lot of attention on them. That's how emboldened they are. The detainees were taken to a prison in Israel, with the country's foreign ministry saying it offered voluntary deportation to all of the activists. Some reported ill treatment during their detention, while solicitors representing Irish detainees called on the government to condemn the unlawful arrests and reckless use of force against unarmed civilians. It's possible you might have one of these electric pumps. This was going around the news yesterday, but just in case this is the only show you listen to, a major warning has been issued in relation to more than 100,000 circulating pumps, which could pose a serious risk of electrocution. Consumers and tradespeople are very vulnerable to the serious risk of electrocution from the affected pumps, according to the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. The agency issued an urgent safety alert in relation to the 114,000 circulating pumps installed in heating systems in Ireland. The affected products are Toxin 5M, 6M and 8M pumps, manufactured between 2017 and 2024. While consumers can continue to use their heating systems as normal, they must take care not to handle affected pumps, as there's a serious risk of electrocution. And what I believe it to be is the power, you can plug the power in, of course, and neutral goes to neutral, power goes to power, but also you can reverse it and plug it in and cross the wires effectively. Do you know how on some power cords there's a little plastic spur or something that can prevent you reversing the polarity or the currency or whatever the phraseology might be? But in this case, you could plug it out, plug it back in, and of course, risk electrocution. So those pumps are the Tucson 5M, 6M and 8M pumps, manufactured between 2017 and 24. You can check out ccpc.ie to get pictures and more information. Obviously, sometimes these things need to be visualised. And teenagers aged 10 to 15... These are teenagers aged 13 to 15 are three times more likely to vape than adults. Can you imagine that? 13 to 15 year olds in this country, three times more likely to vape, and they would never have smoked in their lives, you would imagine. Nearly 15% of youngsters in Europe are users, compared to just 4.5% of over 18, says a World Health Organization. And Ireland apparently is even worse in relation to that. We're multiples of that. So you've got a lot of teens, a big percentage of teens, 15% Europe-wide, but I think we're higher in Ireland, who are vaping aged between 13 and 15. That's big, isn't it? That's a big number. And of course, we as adults most of the time might not even know about that. Right, okay, that was a run through some of the stories making the insides in front of the papers today. We'll be back with more on this show shortly. Today is the 3-year anniversary of the tragic explosion in Chrysler, in which 10 people very sadly lost their lives. And obviously it's something that remains, you know, with us, all of us, and will so forever, especially those who were directly affected by it or were in Chrysler that day. The loss, obviously, that the bereaved families and friends feels, and the trauma as well of people that were there and those that assisted and what have you. And we've made the conscious decision because of the day that's in it to sort of step back a little bit and allow people to grieve or to remember in the way they did. And what we do all of the time is offer our support and our platform whenever those affected by this wish to speak, whether it's in terms of frustrations with the pace of the investigation. It's 3 years on and there are still so many unanswered questions. But it's not that we're not acknowledging it on this programme. It's a conscious decision just to allow the people of Chrysler to have today the way they wish to have today, if that makes sense. And what they're actually hosting today, a commemoration service is taking place, as I mentioned, on the third anniversary of the explosion in Chrysler. It's taking place at 3 p.m. at the site of the tragedy. Just so you know, the N56 road through Chrysler village will be closed from 2:45 until 4 p.m. A traffic management plan and local traffic diversions will be in place. So please keep the planned traffic restrictions in mind and leave extra time for journeys in the area. And of course, our thoughts are with the Chrysler community at this time and all of those directly affected by this tragedy, many who we speak to on a regular basis, and we're always here to platform any concerns they may have or to have any conversations they wish to have. But as I say, just today we're allowing the people of Chrysler to deal with today in the way they wish to. But please note, you're very, very, very much in our thoughts, and not just today, all the time, I will say. Right, now I'm joined by Shauna on the programme, who had a horrible experience in the storm, Storm Amy. Shauna, how are you getting on?
I'm getting on all right. Yourself?
I'm doing good. Right, now, so you're living in a caravan, are you?
Yeah.
Okay, and tell us what happened on Friday then. And actually, for those watching, we do have a video of what happened as well, but just for the radio listening public, you might outline what happened. Were you in the caravan at the time, by the way?
Yeah, me and my 9-month-old was in the mobile, and I was just making her bottle. And I just heard this rattle. I didn't know that if it was thunder or what it was, but I was standing at the window and all I seen then was the tin all over the street. So obviously I lifted my daughter to the high chair, but I couldn't get the door open because the tin was jamming us in.
How scary. And so then, it comes off like the lid of a tin of beans or something, doesn't it? It just peels straight off.
Yeah, literally, I didn't realise that it came off, like the whole lot of it came off, until I watched the CCTV back, that how quick it came off. I'd been living in there a good few years through loads of storms, and nothing like that ever happened. Never. It was just so scary. I think it's because I was trapped in more with the baby.
100%. Your maternal instinct just kicked in, and what's happened here? What could happen next? How can I protect my baby?
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially because I couldn't get out. And my grandparents just lived like down the street. And my granddad obviously had seen it. Mm. And he came up. And I think only for him, I don't know, because I passed my daughter out the door to him. And he ran onto my dad's house with her. Other than that, I don't know what would have happened because nobody was like at home. Like, dad was at work and I was on my own.
Like, and you wouldn't have, I mean, I think you're the mobile's well anchored, isn't it? So you know,
absolutely.
I mean, you would have imagined that. I don't think you could have predicted something like this was going to happen. You know, batten down the hatches.
No, definitely
let
not.
It pass for a couple of hours. But, I mean, you can see there's very little movement on the mobile. It's just literally the wind gets in under the roof and away it goes.
Absolutely, because if I thought that,
yeah,
I wouldn't
course.
Obviously have had the baby inside. I would have came into my dad's house.
Yeah.
If I thought that was going to happen, I would never put her at risk like that
Of course, yeah. No, that's what I'm making that point. It's just you could never have predicted this might happen. But what that
absolutely
does, though,
not.
Effectively, it is. I mean, obviously, you're staying with family, but you're homeless. This was your home.
Yeah, it's destroyed now, and like I think the water's got into electrics and stuff like that now, so it's unfixable now. Like, do you know,
yeah,
and like stuff's got destroyed and stuff in it as well.
What are you going to do?
What
are you going to do, Shauna? Because this
I don't
is,
know.
Yeah,
I don't actually know. I'm lucky enough to be so close to my dad that, you know, he said, "Yeah, you can stay here." But I mean, it's temporary. So
that was
I
your own
that.
Space for
do.
You, for you and your baby too, as well. I mean, it's lovely
absolutely.
That the it's lovely that the family generosity is there, and that's good. But I mean, you know, it's nice also when you had your own space to have your own space. So, do you know what you're going to
absolutely.
Do? Do you know what you're going to do now, Shauna, or is there?
I've no idea. No, none.
Mm.
I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I haven't really thought much about it.
No,
I'm
I
just
know.
Kind of glad that the wee girl's grand, like, because it was very, very terrifying.
Yeah.
With her.
I can imagine, and then
you know,
feeling trapped then as well. Bad enough, like I can. What was the noise like? I mean, it must have been like.
It sounded like a bang of thunder.
Yeah.
Like it didn't sound like a roof coming off.
Mm.
It just sounded like thunder. But if I wasn't standing at the kitchen window making her bottle, like, I don't know. It just didn't sound like a full tin roof coming off.
Yeah, and I don't want to exaggerate
but there was,
it.
Like insulation everywhere, yeah. Like insulation all over the fields, all over the street, everywhere. There's stuff everywhere.
Like, I don't want to sort of make things worse than they are as well, but, I mean, you could have gone, right, I'm getting out of here, it's getting windy, and at that time the roof could have come off. Do you know what I mean? So, in a way, it could
absolutely
have been very,
and then,
very,
like,
very
I always
bad.
Was told, like, if anything like that ever happens, like, be very careful because tin's so dangerous, like, it could cut you in half.
Yep.
Do you know? It's so, so dangerous. Like, I was always told that.
Mm.
But obviously, at that time, I was getting out, but I couldn't open the door. Like, the door, I don't know what was jamming it, or was the tin jamming it, or what it was, but I couldn't get out. Yeah. And obviously, I started to panic.
All right. Listen, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you went through this. I'm so happy that you and your daughter are safe. But I also understand when you get that, when you have that independence, even though you're in the arms of a loving family, Shauna, you know, you miss that independence and that space of your own as well.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely.
And what area is this in, Shauna, by the way?
This is in a Shauna area.
In a Shauna area, okay. Right, well, listen, if anyone has anything to contribute, we'll pass anything on to you, or any advice or anything that someone might say. Again, it's one of those. It could have been so much worse, but it's still, you have to deal
absolutely.
With it. You have to deal with it as bad as it is. Okay, listen, thanks for that, Shauna. And do you know what that highlights too is, and we heard Councillor Joy Beard talking about this as well. There's a lot of people in this county now living in mobile homes. Some do by choice because they maybe have a mobile home on site, or maybe that's part of their lived experience. But there's a lot of people now in defective concrete homes, and some of these homes are right on the brink. And it's bad enough that the wind is going at them if you're still in one of those. But if you've moved out and into a mobile, and more people are in mobiles now than ever were, of course, in this county because of the defective concrete block crisis, do we have a plan in place? I know there was calls for a plan in place that offers safe spaces somewhere so people can sort of, you know, when there is a red warning or even a strong orange warning, get out of these unsafe houses or these mobile homes. Okay. Thinking on Shauna and her baby there. It could have been much worse, but still they have to deal with what they have to deal with, and it's not terribly pleasant. I just want to give a quick mention to the Letterkenny University Hospital Northwest Breast Cancer Ball. More details of that have been announced over the last couple of days. Apparently, it's one of the most fun nights on the calendar, where everyone gets dressed up to the nines. It's the Northwest Breast Cancer Ball, and it is in aid of breast cancer research, which is critical. And we are leaders in this part of the world in terms of breast cancer research, so it's great to have events like this. So the event is on Friday the 5th of December 2025 at the Silver Tassie Hotel Letterkenny. There's a drink reception at 7:15, dinner at 8, and the dress code is black tie formal. The Beefsteak Dancers are brilliant. They're providing the music on the night, and your host is Noel Cunningham. Tickets are just €60 and are available from the Tassie 91251619. So that's maybe a Christmas night out with a difference for you. The 5th of December, that's the Letterkenny University Hospital's Northwest Breast Cancer Ball. Right, now MEP Cynthia Ní Mhuirchiú joins me on the show now. Good morning, Cynthia. How are you?
Greg, good morning to you and your listeners.
It's lovely to have you on the programme. Right, now, what's your reaction to where we're at, I suppose? The shocking news the night before last, Jim Gavin's pulling out of the presidential race.
I want action. I want answers. I want it camp and comprehensive. I want a full review based on a timeline from the very beginning, the get-go of who brought Jim Gavin as a suggested candidate into the party, and where did the vetting procedure begin, and how did it begin, and what due diligence was carried out over what period, and what topics did it cover. We all know that financial scandals can dog a candidate. We also know that sexual scandals can get in the way, and other scandals of other nature can also get in the way. And so, what was the exact nature of the vetting, to what extent, over what period, and who knew what when? And not only at the a conclusion of the vetting process does the timeline of events end. We need to then follow through in relation to, I suppose, the nomination process itself and the vote of the parliamentary party, and right through up until the very cataclysmic interview of 12 noon with Áine Lawler and the Week in Politics on Sunday, and right through until 10:30 p.m. that night, Greg, when I got a text into my phone, and everybody else did in the parliamentary party. In particular, if I could just focus on that Sunday. On that Sunday, I couldn't participate in the canvass in Carlow, which was a Jim as president for election, without Jim Gavin. But I do know that my faithful Fianna Fáil supporters who helped get me elected, a bunch of them were canvassing outside of Dr. Cullen Network, Netwatch Park on Carlow. I couldn't join them, but they are asking, why were they canvassing on that Sunday afternoon when they feel at this stage, yet to be firmed up and confirmed, they feel that the Fianna Fáil party knew that Jim Gavin's campaign was over as he did that interview at 12 noon. They were out in the afternoon, Greg.
Yeah, and there's other pictures of people on the same day putting up posters and stuff, and it would feel very humiliating. The information published this morning in the Irish Independent suggesting that September 8th, the party was contacted by the Irish Independent, raising question marks over Mr. Gavin's selection, referencing this potential overpayment of $3,300 in rent. I'm not sure how specific the allegation was on the 8th of September, but this far predates, you know, the weekend. Your reaction to that the party may well have known as early as September 8th that there were question marks?
My reaction is one of deep concern. I'm not going to start getting emotional and saying anger, although there is anger behind that concern. Could I just say the 8th of September, Greg, is well in advance of nominations for the presidency closing. I mean, we're talking about weeks before the end of this process. We're talking about weeks of time during which changes could have been made, if changes were required to be made, or further investigations more rigorous, perhaps, than what had happened prior to that. So we're talking about ifs, buts and perhapses. And at the parliamentary party meeting tomorrow night, Wednesday, I will be in Strasbourg, so I will join online. But Greg, I will have organised tabled questions, because it's likely to be a lengthy meeting and it's likely to be a meeting that everybody will want to contribute at. But out of this meeting, we will need to have established a decision for a process, a meaningful process by way of an investigation made up, I would suggest, of people within the parliamentary party, investigators within the parliamentary party, and possibly somebody from outside who's a professional person in this regard, outside of politics, somebody well regarded, who will lead out or assist us to lead out on this investigation, which will have to be rigorous and backed up, not only by asking questions, Greg, but by getting documents. Could we please see copies of documentation, of communications, etc.?
To what end, though? So, say there is a thorough investigation. I think Micheál Martin, to some extent, has already said, you know, the buck stops with me. This was his shout. You know, I think he stated that no one really was stepping forward from within the party. I could name two or three people who perhaps could have been interested if approached from within Fianna Fáil that would have made very good candidates.
Yeah.
But I mean, so ultimately, where does the buck stop? What should be the consequence of this? Not to predetermine the outcome of any investigation, but Micheál Martin has already said, look, this is me. This is on me.
Greg, it's not always about the end result being heads rolling. It's not always that. That may be part of it if somebody has behaved in a manner that hasn't been up to the professional standards of what is required in the profession that we're in or in the world of work that we are in. But we do need to learn from mistakes. And by learning, I mean changing our ways going forward. So, for example, Greg, I'll just explain to the listeners. When I was invited to seek a nomination from Fianna Fáil to run as an MEP in Ireland South, there was a process, a democratic process, not for me to get selected, but there was a vetting process. The vetting process consisted of me presenting my vision by way of a proper presentation, which I had to deliver orally in front of a collection of very senior Fianna Fáil people within the party from different constituencies and from different subcommittees who were coming with what I would call a very broad experience of the Fianna Fáil family, which I thought was a very worthwhile committee or subcommittee to come before. It was very formal and I awaited the outcome, a little bit like a job interview, to be honest with you, if that could relate to people who are listening. I want to know, is that the process that is applied at every level, whether you want to be a councillor, whether you want to be a senator, whether you want to be a TD or whatever, or whether any candidate from outside of the party or within the party, is it different for outside and inside? Because what I see is, since I got elected, Greg, a lot of people are genuinely interested in politics, and some of them, I'm inviting them to be genuinely interested in joining Fianna Fáil, particularly women, and particularly getting involved in a role as a public representative. And I want them to have faith in a professional system within the party. That's what I want.
Yeah, indeed. But I mean, given the level of scrutiny that the candidates have faced so far, why would anyone why would anyone want to get into politics? But anyway, that's a conversation for another day. But you retain your faith in Micheál Martin's leadership, do you?
I do. Look,
is that not like
no
riding
again.
Two horses, though? Because he's taken responsibility for himself
Greg,
to this.
Can I just say, I spent 27 years in a court. If I was to jump to conclusions after day one of the evidence, you know, I wouldn't be a very good barrister. I wouldn't be a very good barrister for my client, nor for the judge, nor for the entire process. Okay? So can we have the meeting? Can we have a decision made on foot of that meeting? Can we have a process? Not a very lengthy process, not a very slow process. I'm loath to those kind of processes, Greg. I don't like foot dragging. I just like to, you know, do it, get on with it and get the right people involved to make decisions. But Micheál Martin, apart from all the brilliant things he has done and the great things he has done, right, we also need, in this current climate of a cost of living crisis, I saw it in action on Saturday in my own hometown in St. Vincent de Paul in the shop where I went in to offload some clothing. It was absolutely full of people who were dreading the budget, dreading it, right? They can't afford to put on heat. You know, they can't afford to pay for their butter and their milk and basic stuff. So we do need to get on with leadership here in the government and with looking after citizens.
I don't mean anything funny, but there's nothing in the budget for those people that you have that great sympathy for. You know, there's no cost of living measures. There's no one-off measures. If you get a pay rise, the tax bans aren't going to be increased. That's going to be eaten up by government. You know, there are tax breaks and incentives for developers. We do need new houses, don't get me wrong. And the hospitality industry, you know, and hotels who have been accused of gouging will benefit from that as well for their food offerings. You know, so there's very little in this budget for the people that you have the greatest sympathy for. And you cited them as a defence of Micheál Martin's leadership. So it would be remiss of me as a journalist not to sort of challenge you on that to some extent.
No. And you're entitled to challenge. And sorry, you're entitled to cherry pick what you wish from a budget. There are many other positive measures I would submit in the budget with regards to special needs, with regards to children, with regards to all of the sphere of education and so forth, which is also vitally important.
But just pulling it back to those people.
But a budget is about choices.
Of course.
But a budget is about choices. And certain choices are made here. I represent SMEs in Ireland South.
Yes.
And they are put to the pin of their collar to actually keep their businesses open. So I very much welcome this measure in relation to VAT. And I've heard the economists arguing against it. Yeah. I actually welcome it.
Of course, but you would also know that we have some of the highest electricity bills in Europe.
I certainly do.
And so on and so forth. But just in relation to that budget, those people that you cited that you had sympathy for in your own constituency, St. Vincent de Paul, what do you see in the budget for them then? Just to be fair to you, Cynthia, you know, those are the people
what I see in the budget for them is I see the social welfare system. There will be increases. I see also that there will be interventions for their children. It is that cohort of people that I represented in court that I'm acutely aware needed special needs for their children. They needed assistance in classrooms, and the government is doing something about that. Could I just say, Greg, it would be remiss of me to go off air now if this interview is finishing without mentioning the Fishers in Killybegs, with whom I am very close to. I just want to say that Ireland operates one of Europe's most modern and specialised pelagic fishing vessels. vessels, and Killybegs, as we know, is Europe's largest fishing port. If the cuts are accepted that I've been reading about, it's going to cause irreparable devastation and a loss of the of our maritime business. So I'm going to look for, I look forward, I just want to recommit to the fishers there. I hope Eodonal Agazid Gilead Toshvigeshtacht. I want to bring these pressing issues to the PESH committee. I will be doing that this month.
Understood. And who, I don't think it's a too personal a question, would you have voted for Jim Gavin previously? If he hadn't withdrawn from the presidential election, would you have voted for him for president?
I would have, because I voted for him in the parliamentary party meeting. Could I just say, Greg, though, after very careful consideration of his profile on paper and also after meeting him in person and assessing him and interviewing him myself in my own little inimitable way, I believed that Jim Gavin would have had a far greater reach of voters, okay, both within Fianna Fáil and outside of Fianna Fáil in a presidential election than my wonderful colleague, Billy Kelleher. It was all about winning the race. I wanted the candidate who I thought was going to have the better chance of winning.
And who do you vote for now?
I will be voting, certainly not for Catherine. She is a fine candidate. But I will not be voting for Catherine because her stance on Russia is simplistic. In many ways, it's childish. I was in Tallinn in Estonia last week, and we are under serious threat in Europe. And I don't mean we on the eastern flank of Europe. I mean we in Ireland. We, far closer to the other side of Europe, we are under constant threat, and we must defend our borders. And we must be resilient, if you want to use that word, which is a slightly, I suppose, softer word than resilience and defence. But it's really important. And what really frustrates me about Catherine Connolly is that she refuses to answer questions on Russia. She refuses and deflects to Gaza, which is a totally separate issue. And she refuses to see the reality and still persists in an argument that I find extremely weak, which is that peace talks are something that are of interest to Putin. Nothing could be further from the truth. So I think that answers your question with regards to Catherine and Heather Humphreys.
Okay, so you're voting for Heather.
I will certainly be casting my vote for Heather. I will not be pushing that vote, and I certainly do not believe the Fianna Fáil party or anybody in leadership will be asking anybody to vote for Heather in some particular way. Everybody's entitled to make up their own mind, but my politics lie far closer to Heather Humphreys than to Catherine in relation to that particular issue I've mentioned.
Have a lovely day. Thank you for your time.
Gormagat, Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care. That is MEP Cynthia Ní-Murchú there. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. The caller says Fianna Fáil politicians are good crack. Cynthia Ní-Murchú supported Jim Gavin's nomination. Surely she should have been asking these questions before she supported his nomination. Well, she says she did her interview in her own way, so to speak. In relation to the budget, the caller says the budget needs to look at working parents. There's no support to work. There's more support to stay at home, i.e. childcare, health and bus fees. Also needs to look at how to tackle inequality in industries where people are doing the double and triple even. Example, beauticians or hairdressers working at home, not paying tax, claiming welfare, charging salon prices at times. Staying with the budget should have looked after older people and people on disability. These people are freezing in wintertime and definitely can't afford to even heat themselves. But this government does not give two damns about this type of people. In fact, I would go so far as to say they are hoping they die off cold. There is going to be an increase in the pension. And of course, the winter fuel allowance began being paid last week. But that's your view. I appreciate it. Hi, Greg. See, they put the minimum wage up again and the prices and costs just keep on rising. All this talk about reducing VAT in restaurants, a waste of time. You'll never see this passed on in the cost of a meal or a night out, and I don't think that's really the intention as such. On the presidential debate, what a disaster for Fianna Fáil. Surely it's not too late to change the rules so that Bertie can replace Gavin on the ballot paper. They are trying to actually see if there's any if there's any framework in legislation to remove Gavin from the ballot, because they haven't been printed yet, right? And it's a bit It's a bit silly. So we were talking yesterday about how the fact as it stands, because this is unprecedented, he would be on the ballot paper even if even though he's pulled out. But I do understand they are looking at the situation to see if he can at this point be removed from it, which I think would make a lot of sense at this stage, and give a bit of credibility to the election as well. Right, now I'm joined on the programme by Mairead. Thank you for taking the call this morning, Mairead.
Thank you for inviting Alcoholics Anonymous to come and speak. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're speaking in the context of an event being held this weekend, the 10th, 11th and 12th of October in Jackson's Hotel in Ballybuffet. How do you reach people, Mairead, that they're at the right time of their life now, or maybe their experience is such that now is the time that they can maybe think about reaching out and getting some help?
Well, the easy options, in addition to the event that's taken place over the weekend, as you've just said, Greg, at Jackson's Hotel, there's a great meeting taking place at 6 o'clock on the Saturday evening, which is an open public information meeting where anybody who is affected or believes that they may be affected in a negative sense with regards to alcohol, or if you have a member of your family that you're concerned about, you could attend that meeting and you'll hear information from two members of the fellowship who have overcome alcoholism. And there will be a member of the Al-Anon Fellowship, which helps support families of alcoholics. And there'll also be a member of the medical profession there sharing their experience of how they dealt with alcoholics. You can also get information on the alcoholicsanonymous.ie website, and you'll get telephone details on there as well if you just wish to make a confidential call on a member of the fellowship. Will be there to provide all of the details that you need as to how you can become a member and how Alcoholics Anonymous can support you in overcoming your addiction to alcohol.
Yep. You're 6 years sober in November. Congratulations, by the way. It's a remarkable milestone and a great personal achievement. How important has Alcoholics Anonymous been getting you to this point?
Alcoholics Anonymous has literally transformed my life. I was a person that drank nearly every single day for nearly 30 years. I didn't think, Greg, that I would become a daily drinker, an hourly drinker, a morning drinker. I never thought I would be that person that would have to be separated from alcohol and go into a treatment facility for 3.5 months. The progression of the illness really took me down, and I didn't realize it was an illness. I didn't realize it was progressive. And when I came out of that treatment facility, they directed me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got a sponsor and worked the 12-step recovery program with my sponsor, genuinely, my life has been totally and utterly transformed to the extent sometimes that I can't articulate the difference. Alcohol does not feature in my life at any point. I don't fight alcohol one day at a time. I have the unbelievable ability now, because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, to live my life one day at a time and not to be concerned about alcohol in any way, shape or form. So my sponsor and the program that is outlined is a very clear-cut set of directions that enables me to be free from alcohol and a number of other things in my life. And as a result of the work that Alcoholics Anonymous does so diligently across all of Ireland, we've got 750 groups across Ireland. We've got meetings every day, physical meetings, online meetings, and through that opportunity to meet with this fellowship who are so welcoming, who all they want to do is to help another alcoholic, my life is totally and utterly changed. And I would really be a huge advocate for anybody that may think that they're affected by alcohol, or a family member that you may have that is affected by alcohol. The opportunity to attend the open meeting on Saturday will be a great
so the
opportunity to link in.
The event on the 10th, 11th and 12th, is that's not necessarily an open public event. That's for people within Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the public information meeting, which we're promoting at the moment now at 6 p.m. on Saturday in Jackson's Hotel. Yeah. That's where there is the broader invite. Mairead, I'm just trying to speak to people who might go, well, listen, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? How can I roll up to a meeting that's publicly announced and people not judge me, or people not presume I'm an alcoholic, or people not presume that someone in my family is? I mean, there's no other way around it, okay? But I'm just trying to reach those people who, you know, want to retain that cloak of anonymity, so to speak. So how is that handled, and how do you suggest people approach this meeting on Sunday or Saturday, sorry?
It's a really, really good question, Greg, and it's something that I experienced myself. Who's going to see me? What are they going to say? What happens if somebody is there that I work with, or, you know, a member of my previous school? All of those were concerns that I used to have. And all I would say is that because of our traditions in Alcoholics Anonymous, we are very, very clear about the fact that anonymity is a very big principle by which we are all guided, and that anonymity comes first. Whether you stay as a member of the fellowship or you leave that meeting at 6 p.m. and don't return, we are held by that principle of anonymity, and that will be protected. We have no concerns in relation to that.
Okay, Mairead, listen, thanks very much for joining us. I do appreciate your time. That public information meeting is at 6 p.m. on Saturday in Jackson's Hotel, and there's lots of people, lots of traffic around, people just getting on about their businesses. No one's looking out to see who's doing what or what have you. So if that would be of assistance to you or someone in your family, get along. It could be the most important meeting you ever attend.